What's it like to come to this country as an immigrant with very little language, almost no money, and have to start over again? I'm Joan Hamburg. Join me on the OG Podcast Network and hear the story of Lydia Bastianich, who grew up to be one of the most important food people in America. Fascinating look at the immigrant experience. Join me. Welcome to Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You, all part of our exciting new OG Podcast Network.com. By the way, people always say to me, how do I get to it? Honestly, that's all you do. It's so easy. You know, we're doing two podcasts. Our regular Saturday show, which begins at 2, and you can get that on the same OG Podcast Network, and our special OG Podcast Network, where you get to meet a lot of people you wouldn't meet ordinarily. In fact, Lydia Bastianich is coming along this week. She wrote a moving book. Honestly, I couldn't put it down. And at a time when people who are immigrants are so afraid, at a time when we in America, many, have turned their backs on what was their own heritage. Who doesn't have someone who didn't come here? Very few, if any, were born here. The American Indians were the original inhabitants. And then people started coming from all over the world. My own grandfather came here at age 14 alone. And what could he do? He ended up with a pushcart going south. And, you know, one of the famous family stories is that his older brother stayed behind in Russia in a little village to take care of their parents. And when the older brother finally came, they paid for passage. They didn't have the language or anything. They didn't know anything. He ended up in South America. And the only time he realized it was South America was when the ship was pulling into dock, and instead of the Statue of Liberty, he saw a lot of people with sombreros. Anyway, they're five generations now, maybe more, in Argentina. So Lydia's story of coming to this country with her brother, with her parents, her father so successful in their little village in Italy, and suddenly having to start all over. It's an amazing story, and it's about the fabric of this country. I'm really a Lydia fan. She's remarkable. So I know you're going to enjoy that. And Joan's week, my gosh, we had a really busy week. Of course, Mother's Day last Sunday, we had a good time. Lizzie, my daughter, my son was in L.A., my daughter and I went to Ronald Lauder's Neue, spelled N-E-U-E, gallery, a museum for German and Austrian art, right on 86th Street and 5th Avenue. It's a wonderful museum in a gorgeous townhouse with a restaurant that a lot of people don't know about. Now, here's something, a little tip. The menu is wonderful. It's real Austrian and Viennese food, a lot of schnitzels and fabulous homemade soups and salads and, of course, sauerkrauts and delicious desserts. It's something you're going to want to have. But what a lot of people don't know, they get scared off by the line waiting for the restaurant. Downstairs is the same food in a very large space and almost never crowded because no one knows about it. So that's a good tip for you. The show that we went to see was Before the Fall, German and Austrian Art of the 1930s. And they often have guided tours. It's such a pretty house and a terrific gift store. So that can be on your museum list. Plus, the costume exhibit, which is always the big do in New York. It's a huge event. Bear, the line for this on Mother's Day was around the block because It's a beautiful show. Everyone loves the costume exhibit. If you're a member, you do not have to wait online. The show is called Heavenly Bodies, Fashion, and the Catholic Imagination, and it is going to be on till October 10th. So do it, because it's so interesting. It's about fashion. It's about medieval art, and it deals with the practices and traditions of Catholicism. So you're going to see gorgeous things from the Vatican, plus other remarkable fashions, and it's fun to do. And now in the museum, there are also good places to eat. The members' dining room is now open to the public. It's expensive, but I particularly like going. Such a beautiful room on a weekend, because I love that basket of scones and biscuits and all kinds of goodies. So it's a lovely thing to do. That I know that you're going to enjoy that. Oh, how could I forget to remind you that on June 5th, it is our Tony Celebration of Everything show. And as always, it's star-studded. In fact, my pal Alan Alder's coming over. He's got something special to talk about. Renee Fleming, the fabulous, glamorous star of the Metropolitan Opera, who's now starring on Broadway, she's coming over. So we have, I'd say, almost every Broadway show represented. The star who got reviews you can't believe, Ethan Slater from SpongeBob, you're going to get to meet everyone. So remember, it's June 5th. It's taking place at a different location this year with a wonderful menu. So sort of don't eat a big breakfast. It's at the Empire Steakhouse, right in the theater district. And the number is 212-613-3848. And even if they put you, you know, on hold, or they say, we'll get back to you, leave your name and number, because it is filling up and we would like you to be there. We always have a ball. So remember, June 5th, pre-Tony show at 212-613-3848. So what else did I want to... Oh, you know what I wanted to ask you? I am going crazy with fake calls. I cannot believe I'm getting calls in Chinese. That is ridiculous. And I'm not alone. I actually read on Facebook people saying, what's going on here? I'm also getting calls claiming they're from Apple or any of the big companies like that. And they tell you that your computer has been invaded and that you're really in trouble. It's a scam by phone. It's got a tech support impersonator who seems to know everything about you, even your computer, your operating system, your browser. So I called Apple to say, I have had three calls. I've had more than that, but this is just the other day, in the course of 45 minutes. Do you not want to issue a warning to the millions of us who have Apple products saying, don't respond? Because the first time I got it, it was at night. It was only after I opened it, I realized Apple isn't going to call me at night. And indeed, Apple says they never call. If they need you, they go to you by email or something. There's no way they're going to call millions of people. This is a fraud. And if you did what I did, open it, you're going to get 2 million more of these calls. So be very careful. Although Apple, I didn't get a manager. I got some kid who answered finally after a million sort of voice prompts, and he didn't seem interested enough. But Apple and these companies should really do something about it, because a lot of people they ask for information, and a lot of people do that. So beware. Remember the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. All right, everyone. Lydia is waiting in the wings for Let Me Tell You, the OGPodcastNetwork.com. I'm Joan Hamburg. Stay tuned. To Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You podcast. And you have met in the past many times Lydia Bastianich, who is, I don't even know how to describe Lydia. She is an author. She's a restaurateur. She's a chef. She's a businesswoman. She's a mother, a caretaker. Lydia wears so many hats, I don't know where to begin. But I have to tell you, Lydia, I'm so happy you are here. I could not put down my American dream, a life of love, family, and food. It's even more than a memoir. I literally tasted the figs and the cherries when you climbed the tree in your uncle's yard. And what a story, what a gift to give your children, grandchildren.
Oh, thank you, Joan. Such a pleasure to be on the air with you. And yes, you know, it's my story. It's a real story, of an immigrant girl actually coming to U.S. at 12 years old. But, you know, I thought it was maybe a family story. And what I find out is that more and more people really relate to it.
Well, because we all, you know, don't share the same background, but my grandfather came here at 14 years old alone. They put him on a boat to get out of Russia. He was just a kid, and he started peddling things, and he was an American success. And your story as a refugee who had an idyllic childhood, and then your world in Italy started changing as the communist regime reared its head in your little town.
Yes, indeed, you know, and that's what changed the whole, you know, being Italian, the oppression of communism as far as remaining Italian, speaking Italian, our church practices, our religious practices, and all of that. And so it kind of made us flee. But, you know, that's a reality, as you said, of many people before us and of many people now. It's just that, you know, I was part of that trip, and you know, I was given this great opportunity to become American and to make my life here. I came here as I was 12, so I was young enough to absorb and get really into America and being American, and I am forever grateful. And I thought sharing this story, you know, even though there's a lot of adversity, it is positive. It ends positive.
Oh, no, very positive.
Yeah, yeah. And so you know, I want that message out, that if you give somebody a chance and this person really grabs and works at it, can make it happen.
But what's so interesting, too, is here your family, even when the communists took over, was living initially this idyllic life, surrounded by people who loved you. Your dad, even under the regime in the beginning, had trucks. He made a living, a really good living. You lived in a big house. And then it started closing in. You had to change your name. You couldn't speak Italian. Your parents couldn't even have you baptized. It had to be done in secret. So your mother, your father, decided it was time to get out, but your dad couldn't go with you at that time. They wouldn't give him a visa.
Absolutely. You know, they wouldn't leave the whole family go out because they knew if they gave a visa to the whole family,
They'd be gone.
They wouldn't return. So my father remained as a hostage when when they gave us the visas to go, my mother, my brother, myself, and then he escaped literally over the border, or you know,
he
went to, you know, the dogs were running after him, but he made it, and we were back in free Italy. In the aftermath of the war. But, you know, even that was difficult.
Hard.
Italy was really devastated, and the whole area was. And we ended up being in a political refugee camp for 2 years.
Which had been a concentration camp.
Right, right. It was a dreary place, Joan. You know, I can still smell. It smelled musty. Mm. Dark, wet all the time. And we were there for 2 years awaiting an opportunity. And then finally, in 1958, Dwight Eisenhower was the president, and he opened immigration for political refugees, people fleeing communism. And we were blessed enough to come to the United States in 1958.
And you were sponsored by Catholic Charities. And it was really, you know, my family were involved with the International Rescue Committee. But everyone's story is different. But when you realize what charities like Catholic Charities, IRC, what they do to change people's lives, they took your family. Your mother didn't even understand in the beginning. When they gave her money, she saved almost everything so she could pay them back. They got you housing. They helped with everything. It was extraordinary.
Yes, we had nobody here. We didn't even speak the language. And so, you know, these organizations, these charities of people that really cared, people maybe that went through hardship and then decided to give back, these are the people that settled us, that made us kind of enter our new life in America. You know, Joan, when finally they found a little apartment and a job for my father, people were coming and dressing up the house. They were bringing chairs. They were bringing towels.
They were trying to make you a home.
Yes, yes. And all these people. Now, you know, I don't remember the names of these people, but I remember the goodness. I remember how people cared. And, you know, it fills my heart. And there's a lot of that out there and still happening. And we need to appreciate, and certainly, you know, I feel very much part of giving back now when I was given so much.
Of course. And Lydia, the stories, I mean, not only can you taste the warm fruit and the things that came out of the kitchen and realized that we buy a breast of chicken, you know, to nibble on for a salad, but the chicken has a lot of other parts, and how your family, literally all these families, utilized everything. But I love the fact that you knew no one, and finally someone told your family there might be a relative living in Astoria. Now you guys were settled in a little house in New Jersey, and there were no phones, so you had a family manage without language to get to Astoria and knock on a perfect stranger's door without any warning to say, we're your cousins.
Right, right. Well, you know, we had no phones. We had anything. Just the mother of this cousin told us that her son is someplace there, but she did give us the address. And this was a distant cousin that he jumped ship. He was alone as a young man and was working on the ship. So when he came to the United States, jumped ship. And so we showed up early in the morning on Sunday morning, you know, like in Europe, knocking on the door. They were still in their pajamas, but we were at the end, after some scrutiny, we were allowed in and welcomed, and it was great to sort of find a piece of family.
Right. And then they moved you to Astoria, but coming from this wonderful home surrounded by loved ones, you know, to small apartments, it was really a challenge, and especially for your dad, who had trouble with language, who was older, who was so successful. And how do you find work, and how do you keep your pride?
Right, right. I think my father was the hardest hit. He was, you know, I think over 55 or something, and his house, everything he worked for, his business had been dismantled. And here he was, not speaking the language, not able to communicate with workers. And he had difficulties in learning the language. And he was kind of, I remember him, always melancholy. And I don't think so much, you know, to go back, but just, you know, life had kind of truncated him. And he took it hard.
I'm sure. And your mother, God bless her, whom we still see on television, enjoying having a little glass of wine.
Yes.
Making us all feel safe because she's there.
Well, she was the strength, you know, the kind of the tree that held it all together in a sense of spirit.
She was a school teacher, too.
Exactly. She was a school teacher. So she kind of, I guess, her philosophy was very positive of life. She knew there was no way of going back. Neither did she want to go back. This was the future for her children. And she was right. And, you know, Joan, sometimes I think, you know, and people say, Lydia, boy, you know, you're successful. My brother as well. He's very successful.
Engineer.
Yes, in his field. And I think all of this kind of the drive that I had, still have in me, is to thank my mother, to tell her, Mom, you were right. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. We're going to make the most of it.
Right. And the stories of when, I mean, of course, anyone who travels, we have no clue about the money until we learn. But here's this family without language, without anyone, being given a couple of dollars, not knowing how to shop in a market, not knowing what to buy. Food was often bread and milk because she didn't want to go through all the money or understand it.
She was very afraid. How is she going to pay back this money? She didn't have a job and she didn't want to get in debt, if you will. So the money that the social workers gave us for food, in a sense, like now food stamps, if you will.
Right.
Well, she would guard it. We would have milk, bananas, and Wonder Bread. That was our meal for the first week. And let me tell you.
And you never had a banana before.
No. So I loved it. But, you know, she wanted to be, she was frugal. And then the social worker says, no. You got to feed these people. Don't worry about it. And, you know, Joan, after we sort of found ourselves and they had a job, and she started a little saving account, and we would go yearly back to the social worker to, I guess, for
you see
for
your progress.
Years. And she brought her little bank book, and she wanted to pay them back.
They wouldn't take it. But, you know, I've known Lydia a long time, but there are so many things that we couldn't begin to know. First of all, love with food started as a child with your aunt, with your cooking because your mother was working for the family. Even
yes.
When you were in the camp, they sent you to school, and your job was to cook with the nuns. So you early forged this relationship with food from love, from gardens, from caring for your family, and coming of age in Astoria, which was definitely one of the more interesting communities because so many people from so many cultures were in Astoria in those days.
Yeah, Joan, you know, my relationship to food, yes, certainly that idyllic upbringing with grandma where she had old farm animals. We had goats, we had rabbits, we had pigs, we had chicken, ducks, and of course the garden. And my grandfather made olive oil. So I was raised, you know, very close to the origin of food, to the birth of food, to the basics of food. And then when we escaped, I wasn't aware that we're not going to go back. And so when I realized, when I was in Trieste, and I realized I'm not going back, you know, kind of I felt almost like uprooted out of that ground, just like the potatoes I used to harvest. And I think that I continued to connect with my grandmother through food.
Right.
So I would cook the food, you know.
It's your smell. Persistence of memory.
Yes, the smells would bring me back to grandma. And then food became my kind of comfort zone. It became my way of expressing myself throughout my life.
And we are reaping the benefits of it. But Lydia, at a certain point, and she shares what it's like to be the outsider, how all children want to belong more than anything. But a family kept her going. And then Lydia falls in love with a young man at the time in the food world and loved food the way she did. So before you knew it, you were getting married to your mother's distress.
Yes. I kind of fell in love young, yes. And Felice was very much in the food. He was working. And I think that really attracted me as well. He would take me to restaurants.
Good restaurants.
Yes, and we would discuss food. And you know, we got married, had Joseph. And then eventually he wanted to open his restaurant. And that's in 1971. We opened our first little restaurant in Forest Hills, 9 tables.
I think that's where I first met you.
I think so. Going way back to that, it's in the 70s.
It was 70s. In the 70s, and there was a couple on the radio with me, Peggy and Ed Fitzgerald.
Exactly.
And they would go to dinner every Sunday with their priest.
They would come to
you.
Yes, yes.
And they brought me one day. They said, would you like to have dinner with, I forget the name of the priest, I'm ashamed to say now, and we're going to this amazing restaurant where they grow herbs and everything in their garden. They were so excited. Mm. And I still remember, Lydia, the taste. I don't think I had eaten Italian food like that.
Yeah.
It was like someone cooked at home, and that's what you were doing.
And basically, that's what it was. My mother was involved. She would make the pasta. You know, we just all...
Everyone was there. Joseph was a baby running around.
Yes, yes. It was an extension of our home. And we were, you know, passionate about it. And people came and gave you that satisfaction of enjoying, of being part of your table. And so we continued and we grew. And ultimately, you know, we sold our restaurants in Queens and opened Philidia in 81.
Philidia is one of the great restaurants in Manhattan. But when Lydia and her family opened it, they had no idea what a nightmare this was going to be.
Yes, yeah, we almost didn't open, you know. The underpinning of the building, we didn't
Terrible.
Expect. And that really over budget, over time. And, you know, we almost didn't open. We finally did open by leaving things unfinished underneath where you couldn't see it in the cellar. And then, you know, God was good to us and everything kind of exploded because I became the chef here. You know, I was...
And women were not chefs then.
Women were not chefs. And, you know, I did the regional Italian cuisine, the cuisine that we really cooked at home. And everybody, you know, the newspaper guys, you know, you guys are always curious to find out what's new. And so everybody came, even Julia Child and James Beard came one day. And she wanted to know risotto. She wanted to learn how to make risotto. So we became friends. And ultimately, that's how my TV career got started, because she invited me on her MasterChef series. I did two episodes, and then, of course, the producer says, Lydia, how about your own show? So that was great.
And here we have an Emmy Award-winning television host, a cookbook author, dozens of books, restaurants, the owner of a food and entertainment world, and Lydia's done it all with her family, with her love for food, and with her ability to go forward and go through. Very hard for people to say what makes success, but it's passion, right?
It's passion, it's dedication, it's perseverance. It's, you know, taking a chance when the opportunity comes along, but you need to be committed. You need to roll up your sleeve, as we say, and really get to work. And, you know, that we did. But, you know, when there's passion, when you enjoy what you do, maybe it's not all that hard.
Well, it's hard. Unfortunately, you make it look easy because you do it. But you got the whole family involved, and you had a pediatrician who gave you unbelievable advice.
Absolutely.
Because, right, you had no role models then.
No. I was one of the few women chefs in the kitchen. Now, you know, Italian women are in the kitchen in restaurants in Italy. So, but what do you do? You know, you have a growing family. Then I got expected a baby, a new baby, and Tanya came, and the business was growing, and everybody needed me. And so I felt a little bit, what do I do now? And I did go to Dr. Stein. He was a wonderful pediatrician. And he said, Lydia, children want happy parents. You wouldn't be happy if you wouldn't fulfill your dream. So you go ahead, bring your kids with you. You have the support of your family. Keep that support going and just bring the kids along in whatever you do. Make them part of your success. And I did. And truly enough, I was chasing them away from the business.
Of course, you said Joe Business School.
Exactly.
And he couldn't resist. That food gene is in every part of Lydia Bastianich's family. A wonderful book. Honestly, it's such a great read. And it will give you a lot of pause for thought these days when the word immigrant, refugee, has a different connotation. Lydia is the perfect example. My American Dream, a life of love, family, and food. Read it today and go to all the different restaurants. Go to Eataly. Get some of the best things you've ever had. Congratulations, Lydia. Love to the family.
Thanks, Joan.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.